everyone. This has been a long time coming. It's a primer on the logic of emotions. It's an emotional ABC. First, there's four basic core human emotions plus other two that are kind of auxiliary. So to help you remember what are the four core emotions, the core four, we just need to think of what the main types of movies are. We have comedies, we have tragedies, we have action movies, right? And horror movies. And, you know, there's sci-fi as well, but that's based on a different type of story. Remember, we talked yesterday about stories which are true, false, and fictional. Science fiction deals with the fiction part. They're more extreme fiction. All right, so what are the emotions resulting from these four types? Well, you have your comedies, which is your feeling of happiness. That's the positive emotion. The other ones are negative. All the other ones are unpleasant. That shows you what the proportion is in human life between pleasure and pain. Like, then we have one positive emotion, and then we have the three negative ones, which is fear, horror movies, anger, action movies, and sadness, tragedies. Now, the other two are surprise and disgust. And you can have surprises in any good movie, and same with disgust. It works everywhere. They're kind of universal. They're physical responses. One is something unexpected, and the second one, the disgust, is to something unwanted. So, are there no other true emotions? Well, all emotional displays are real. They're just not quite authentic. Jealousy is real, and it's an emotion. It's just not a core human emotion. It gets added down the line because of trouble in development and because of trauma. All other emotions do. Think of emotions in the context of how they develop. This is a very important and interesting angle to view things, and especially since we're so concerned with parenting, peaceful, healthy parenting here. Well, babies have all four emotions, but they are very primitive. Babies are born with a very good anger reflex they rely on for survival, and guess what? That is the purpose of anger. Each core emotion has a purpose, and the purpose of anger is to help us solve problems in the present. Get our needs met. If we don't get our needs met in the present, that's a problem, and we get angry. And the way babies solve their present problems is by getting angry, signaling this to others by crying and annoying you. So this shows you actually what the mechanism is for dealing with children's emotions. And the very important principle there is that whatever you're feeling an emotion in interacting with a child, it's because they're feeling that emotion. They're biologically programmed to make you feel what they feel. And that's important because that's the way that they get to learn how to regulate their emotions, by delegating them to you as a parent. So children don't know how to deal with emotions. Children's emotions are always up to 11. They're dysregulated. They're always at maximum volume. They do not feel anger. They feel rage. Babies don't feel fear. They feel abject terror. They don't feel sadness. They feel complete bottomless dejection. And babies don't feel fear. So they plug in to the psyche of the parent. And however the parent deals with that emotion is how they then learn to deal with it. They copy it from their parents. But let's get back to the four core emotions. We have gladness, actually, because it's not happiness. It's feeling glad. Then anger, which is the main negative emotion, first gets developed. Then we have sadness, which refers to the past. So we have anger, which is the first emotion that gets developed and has to do with the present. And we have sadness, which has to do with the past, with not getting our needs met in the past. Then fear, which has to do with not getting our needs met possibly in the future. So past, present, and future are the realms of the three negative emotions. Past, sadness. Present, anger. Future, fear. And they all have to do with our needs. Anger is a tool by which we get our needs met in the present. Sadness is the medicine we take when we didn't get our needs met in the past. And fear is the alarm that tells us we might not get our needs met in the future. That is how it works. And the way that works is babies, when they don't get their needs met, they manifest anger, and they use that to get their parents to give them what they need. And whenever we do get our needs met, we are glad. And that is the only positive feeling out of the four. Now, a baby doesn't have a concept of time, past, present, and future. They live in the present. After they live in the present for a while, they get to develop the sense of the past. Because some of their needs, inevitably, will not get met right away. They will suffer a loss. They will have to live with a need not being met. So that instance when they needed something and it wasn't instantly provided, that gets stored in the past. That's what gets first developed, is the perception of the past. The role of sadness is to be a medicine. Okay, so they'll notice that they got a need that wasn't met right away. And so that is an injury to their psyche. That is hurtful. The role of sadness is to heal that hurt, that wound, because that's what trauma is. Trauma is an unhealed wound. It comes from the Greek word for wound. You can experience traumatic events. That doesn't mean you get traumatized, because you can heal from the injury caused by the traumatic event. And if you heal, there's no trauma. If you don't heal, then we have trauma. Okay? How do you deal with developing sadness in children? So, babies noticed something was not met, a need was not met right away. And this, if you think about it, this is why children throw temper tantrums, because what? They don't know how to deal with their needs not being met right away. I want food, I want water, not later, now, but we need to get home and then, now! I need it now. Screw later. I want it now. Because you know what? They don't have the perception of the future yet. To them, it's now or it's never. So every moment that they do not get what they want, that is a little injury to them. That gets stored in the past as a moment in which I wanted something and I couldn't get it. Okay, and then comes sadness. You're supposed to feel sad about that, because sadness is actually the physiological process by which our brain heals itself, our psyche heals itself from injuries. And so to teach children how to use, not deal with, because sadness is not something you need to deal with. Like medicine, it's not something to be dealt with if you're sick. Right? The cure is not something you need to deal with. if you have a disease, like, yes, you will interact with it, you will use it, and there is such a thing as too much medicine, definitely, but that doesn't mean it's something to be repressed, it's something to be avoided, because if you avoid the medicine, you won't ever get a cure. So you need to teach children how to use their sadness, how to sit with their sadness, because by experiencing it and not pushing it away and not repressing it and not distracting yourself from it, this is how you take your medicine. Now, do that for too long and you're going to take too much medicine and you're going to overdose. And that can have very negative effects. So you need to also teach them to get out of it, get out of the sadness after they've sat with it for a while. Well, that's easy because they're present-based little creatures. So they would want to get back to the present, naturally. That's the easy part. They snap back to the present like a rubber band. Now, they are looking to you to demonstrate how it's done. And how else would they learn? Well, the problem is that if you don't know how to do that yourself, and if you're a person who runs away from feeling sad, and you're distracting yourself, and you've learned that being sad is a problem, and it's dangerous, and it wasn't rewarded, or it was punished in your family, or in your culture, or, yeah, that creates problems. So you have developed some alternative ways of dealing with your sadness, and guess what? You're going to pass that on to your child. Whatever you use to deal with sadness, they are going to use, because that's the only thing they can learn from you. That's why it's important to learn as an adult and a future parent how to deal with your emotions in a healthy manner. And that's the purpose of this guide. It's a primer on doing just that. Okay, so sitting with your sadness. The way you do it is first you got to empathize with them. Because, like I said, you first have to empathize with their sadness. You have to take their sadness as your own. This is why empathy is so important in parenting. So, yeah, you didn't get your need met. You want to eat, but we don't have any food right now. That is horrible. That is terrible. I remember when I wanted to eat and there was no food, and there was this time when I had to go a whole day without food because we were on this trip and we've taken food with us and a bear ate it or whatever. And we were left without food and we had to march without food. And it doesn't matter if they don't yet get the whole detail of the story. The purpose is for you to get yourself in a sad situation, remembering a sad event for yourself. If you're having trouble empathizing with how sad this is for them. Yeah, because to you, it might be like an inconsequential problem. Like, yeah, oh my God, it's such a big deal. Well, we won't get to eat for another 5 minutes until we get home. Boo-hoo. Right? You won't be able to do it. So you need to think about something that's really sad to you, that was really sad for you, right? To get into that emotion with them, because they will sense. They have their stupid and helpless little creatures with an undeveloped brain and intellect, but children have an extremely finely tuned emotional radar, right? They can sense your exact state of emotion. So if you get into that with them, then half of the problem is dealt with, because now they're no longer alone. They have someone to copy from. And you'll see this. You'll see them get into this receptive state. They'll stop signaling the emotion and they will start receiving, they start recording. You can see it in them. Like, have you ever seen a child that has fallen down and scraped their knee? Like, they start crying like, wow. And that's the initial pain. And then they're very down and they're very sad about it. But the moment that you manifest an emotion, you manifest empathy and you get into that emotion with them. Oh, poor baby, you're sad then, right? Because they're sad because they suffered the loss. You're sad because, oh, poor baby, right? They stop crying. They stop being sad. And people think that this is because they might be faking it or they just wanted attention. No, they're switching into receiving mode. They're no longer broadcasting the emotion because they're busy recording what you're doing, how you're dealing with it. They're watching you. They're literally recording you, how you deal with this. Gets stored deep within their psyche. And this is not just one event, of course. It gets played over and over and over, and an average of your behavior, of your response to the situation gets stored over time. It's important how you deal with each instance, but don't get discouraged by having a bad response once. It's how you deal with it most of the time that matters, okay? So then you need to sit with the emotion. That's easy. You need to be sad. You just need to be sad. It's not something you do. It's something you are. And after being sad for a while, get back to the present, focus on something present, and move on. Pull out of that sadness. Stop the drip of medicine. Like, stop taking the pills, the cure. Don't overdose on the sadness, and then move on. Now, once they realize that there is such a thing as loss, they start to develop the concept of the future. So what happens? Let me just open a parenthesis here and talk about temper tantrums. So why do little children get so angry when they don't get their needs met right away? Because they will do that. And it doesn't mean that you're a bad parent or that there's something wrong with them or with you as a parent. They will do that simply because they are used to this tool, anger, that they know so well, anger, as a means to getting their needs met. So when there's a problem that I'm not getting my needs met as a child, but now I have a problem in the present, which is that I have suffered a loss in the past. The loss in the past is my problem in the present. And guess what the solution for a problem in the present is? Anger. Because mom and dad are all powerful, right? So I get angry, they solve it for me, right? So make it so that I didn't suffer that loss. Change the past, basically. That is the first response, the first strategy that a child tries when experiencing not getting their needs met in the past. Fix it. Fix it, mom. Fix it, dad. Fix it, fix it, fix it, fix it now. Right? That's why they get angry. That's why the temper tantrum. And you know how that stops? It's not how Peterson says, you just need to fight against yourself and just wrestle control, or you need to be threatened and, you know, use fear to repress anger and sadness. Use fear to repress the anger that is caused by not knowing how to deal with the sadness. Like, Jesus Christ, is that a poor plan? And that's coming from one of the world's most eminent psychologists. Oh, I tell you, when it comes to raising children, people go bananas. Like, they lose their freaking minds. It's such a big problem. Like, the solution is not to use force, self-violence, or the threat of violence from another, fear, basically, to suppress the anger that's being caused by not knowing how to deal with the sadness. That's not it. The solution is to learn how to deal with the sadness. Until they do, they will use anger because that's all they know. And the way you teach them is by, like I said, first empathizing with their sadness and then sitting with the sadness, because that's all they need to do. They think it's a problem to be solved, but it's not, actually. It's not. It's just something you have to deal with, you have to sit with and marinate in. That's the sadness. Let it do its job. Like, you need to take the medicine and let it do its job. It's counterintuitive. Because they have a physical reflex that tells them whenever you have a problem, you need to get angry about it so you solve it. But this is in the past. You can't fill that need anymore. There's nothing you can actually do about it but heal from the loss. And that means being sad. Okay? Now, parenthesis over, let's look at the future, the fear. How does fear get into the equation? Because now we're getting even more into human territory because it's talking about the future. The concept of the future is the most human one because all animals have memories, okay? That doesn't, like a dog remembers what happens in the past as a conditioning for its behavior in the present. That's how conditioning works. Conditioned responses. That's how training works. But we as humans have the capacity to make decisions in the present based on outcomes in the future, perceived, predicted outcomes in the future. And we're getting to the next level now. Now we're in the big leagues. Now, fear, remember what I said fear is? If anger is a tool and or is fuel, as you can think of it. Sadness is medicine. Fear is an alarm that lets you know danger ahead. Do something about it. So if the sadness is something you just need to sit with, the alarm prompts action. The alarm prompts action to avoid a loss in the future. So how that works is now that children have become accustomed to not getting their needs met sometimes right away, having to wait a while, right? They have mastered the sadness. Now, there will be some situations where their needs don't get met because their life is beginning to get more and more complex, right? They're not babies anymore. They're not toddlers. Now they're engaging in all sorts of activities with their parents and have schedules and they go to events and they wish for things in the future. It's not just about getting stuff in the present. So there's going to be things that don't depend on you or them to meet. There's going to be things that depend on the world and other people. And the world and other people are unpredictable. How this originates is they have a need that's not being met, but hey, it'll get met later. It'll get solved later. Okay, so they use the sadness. Okay, I know the sadness to heal from the fact that I'm going to have to wait for this need to be met. But oh no, disaster strikes. The future plans become impossible. I want something more complex. I want to go play with my friend at the park. So their friend gets sick and can't make it to the park to play. Whoa. Now, this is a different situation. It's not me having to wait to get to the park to play with my friend. It's me having to accept that I'm no longer going to play at the park with my friend, ever. Never mind tomorrow. You're going to say, well, yeah, but they're going to be healthy again and you're going to play again. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But today, I'm not going to play today. So today is still the future for me because I have a very, very short time horizon in the future. I'm a kid, right? So for me, the end of the day today is like end of the year for you as an adult, right? So today, it's not going to happen. That means that's a big loss. That's no longer a small loss because I just have to wait. That is, waiting will not fix it. It will not come later. It will not come at all. So today, I will not get to play with them. Maybe this week, I won't get to play with them because they have the flu or they're sick or whatever. Oh my God. Okay, so then the notion pops into their mind at one point that things in the future are unreliable. They might go one way or they might go another. This need that I have right now might get satisfied or it might not. That's fear. How likely is it that something wrong is going to happen in the future? Something goes wrong in the future with regards to something that I care about. That's fear. So how you deal with that is how you deal with an alarm. Well, if an alarm sounds like you're driving your vehicle and there is a light on the dashboard, or, you know, you're flying a plane and an alarm pops up saying, engine 2, fire, engine 2, fire. Okay, so that
signals a potential problem in the future. Like the car is going to break down, the plane is going to crash, something might go wrong in the future. You need to respond by analyzing your options and looking at what you could do, what the possible options are for you in the present, so that you avoid stuff like that in the future. If I don't get to play with my friend in the park, how can I prevent that? And if I can't prevent it at all right now, well, just turn off the alarm and brace for impact. And then getting sad about what happened so you can heal from the loss. That's what you do if there's nothing you can do to avoid the future outcome. But maybe you'll be able to do something about it next time. And this is the next level. So yeah, I can't avoid right now the problem of not having anyone to play with at the park because my friend is sick. But what I can do is make more friends so that if one gets sick, I'm not left without a play partner. That'd be nice. Can I do that right now? So maybe, since I can't play with my friend, I'll get to work on preventing future occurrences of this self-same problem from happening again. Which means I'll just go to the park and instead of playing with my friend, I'll make friends with another kid. See how it goes? Okay, so how do you communicate this to them? How do you teach it to them? Well, the same way you have before. It's how you deal with your fears, how you deal with your alarms. Of course, a lot of people have trouble with this. We don't make the best decisions in the present to avoid problems in the future. We quite literally do the opposite because we eat junk food when we know this is going to make us sick. And we make bad decisions in the present even though we know that this is going to be a problem in the future. So, a lot of parents expect their children to behave better than they do. If you don't have this healthy outlook on what fear is and how to use it to behave better in the present, to make better choices in the present because it's a signal, it's an alarm, and you need to act on the alarm or turn off the alarm, turn down the volume, if you can't do anything at all about it, like there's absolutely no solution, but that really is the case. If you can't do anything about the problem now, you can do something about the problem not occurring again in the future, but you can still do something. You should act to either prevent this occurrence of the problem from happening or prevent future occurrences. There's some things that are big enough. Your parent is only going to die once. You just need to brace for impact. Like, there's no getting around that. So you model it for them. And again, they will delegate it to you. They will express their fears to you. And then it's up to you how you deal with that. And most parents, what they do is, oh my God, I hate seeing my child be afraid. So I'm going to console them. I'm going to tell them to not worry. It's going to be okay. And that's not how you do it. It's going to be okay if we do something about it. And the golden rule is don't do anything for your children or for your elderly, for that matter, that they can do for themselves. So, how you model it is by thinking out loud and going, this is how I act when I'm afraid. And look, here's what we could do together to prevent this from happening. Like, I'm going to help you make another friend at the park today. I am going to be there and I'm going to support you. I'm going to talk to their parents and strike up a conversation. You know, I'm going to show you how you do this. Right? And again, they're going to be in recording mode. But if you tell them, hey, just, you know, suck it up. Don't be afraid. Fear is bad. Fear is weakness. Fear is something to be dealt with. Again, like sadness. Oh, because if you deal with the alarm by ignoring it, you're actually not dealing with it. If you're just suppressing the alarm, you're not actually dealing with the problem that the alarm is about. I'm going to stop here because this has been a long episode, but it's an important subject. But I need to get to work because I've been sitting in my car for the past 20 minutes talking about this.